On this podcast, we continue our conversation with Tony Florio about show design, pacing, and creating an environment for your show. He also gives us some insider secrets about the shows he created with Alliance of Miami.
In 86, when Alliance was doing the Jungle Show, and we just happened to have a lot of boys, the gimmick of this guy-girl thing was just a piece of dialogue that Grace Jones, I don't remember who it was, she said, "Women beat their men, and the men beat on their drums." And that became 15 years of Alliance. Sal just said, "Okay, women beat their men, the men beat on their drums." And then the crowd went nuts, and I thought, okay, we're on to something here.
But all of this is discussed in the context of how it all stemmed from design and effect decisions. Great information for any show designer, including this tip.
I tell young people now, and this is good advice, whatever the criticism of your group is from the year before, address it in the first 30 seconds. Address whatever was considered to be most not correct about your group the year before in the first 30 seconds.
Wow.
Okay, and it's a secret. I'm giving it away.
All of this and more right now on the Marching Roundtable. This podcast is sponsored by Alliance Media Network, found online at alliancemedianetwork.com. Alliance Media Network specializes in providing high-quality, cost-effective multimedia production and DVD authoring solutions. Their specialty is team competitive events such as color guard, marching band, baton twirling, dance team, drill team, and gymnastics. Alliance Media combines expertise in cutting-edge visual arts and the latest video production technology in the creation of high-quality event video and DVD production packages. Find them at alliancemedianetwork.com. And now we continue our conversation with Tony Florio about show design, pacing, creating an environment for your show, and about lots of great stories with the Alliance of Miami. So back to our conversation.
Okay. So Tony, you've just gone through and explained to us this horizontal map of all, you know, how you map out what's going to happen. You have the count structure on the vertical list of everything you're going to do. But still, Tony, you find a way to pace things and use these special assets, these talents. You put it together in a way that the pacing is so wonderful. And so can you explain to us at all what's special about that? How do you know where to put those special assets? How do you know when to put the pieces of the puzzle together? Like, how do you help someone understand about how you do that pacing so well?
Well, there's a step in between those two things that I kind of skipped over, which is color, set, scenery, environment. This is another word that I've come to use because theatrical words tend to be off-putting. So using the words costume, set, props, they tend to scare people. So my new way of playing along with the intellectual games of Winter Carnival International here's the thing. I found that it's getting a great reaction from people I talk design with is to talk about the environment. And you know why? Because the environment doesn't mean props necessarily. And the environment doesn't mean scenery. The environment, I'm trying to think although all the four, you know, major programs from this past year, they all have some set or scenery. But a piece of music and a tarp can create an environment. What is the environment? That's the question that must be answered before any decision is made about anything after the soundtrack is chosen, after the program concept is chosen. Okay. And I really find that watching So You Think You Can Dance is, I stopped doing it for three seasons because I was having such emotional reactions to it that I found that it was causing me to miss Alliance. That's the single thing that has caused me to miss teaching Alliance, because Alliance was not a me telling them what to do thing as much as, hey, every kid that ever has been in Alliance, and hopefully a few of them will be hearing this, they know that the kids wrote those shows mostly. I was strictly the puppet master. Okay, some of the most important things that have happened in this activity because of Alliance of Miami are all, the credit goes to the performers. And that's why there's people like Michael Shapiro, Tim Lee, Shannon Bergstresser, okay, all these people who came through the doors, these creative people. Yes, a lot of instructors get turned out by a lot of groups, but what kind of artists and I'm Javier Sosa. The list just goes on and on and on. And I hope I'm already thinking, okay, don't miss anybody's. The list is so long. I could never really remember them all, but I'm mentioning a few that are hot at the particular moment. But the color, the idea that you must at that point decide on color, costume, and imagery, because I can't believe people do costuming last. I mean, I'm constantly mortified that costume is done last. And I just, or color, the flag colors. Well, now let's talk about flag colors. Like, after the show has been started and you're halfway through the drill, then people start talking about flag colors and flag designs. Okay, I don't want to be a hypocrite. Yes, flags, I generally know color going in. I don't always know design. Okay, but the actual art of the particular silk involved. But I kind of know generally a color arrangement. Okay, and it's just very, very interesting. And that's another thing that's with the activity right now. I would advise people, can you steer clear of the overused things? We talked about the ballad. Can you ask yourself, oh, I know what I was talking about, So You Think You Can Dance. The reason So You Think You Can Dance is important, and I can't believe I'm saying this, is because they have this wide, eclectic musical palette on every episode. And, yes. And I actually wrote on Facebook, because I'm connected with a lot of people who I think make decisions. And I wrote on my Facebook page, I said, I hope all of you out there who make the creative decisions for your groups, when you watch So You Think You Can Dance and you're looking for music, because let's all be honest, people are looking for music and So You Think You Can Dance, okay? I'm here to tell you that what's wrong with the activity is I think people watch So You Think You Can Dance, and if there's 12 tunes on one episode, let's just say there's 12. I think young people from our activity are ruling out 8 of those 12 tunes right off the bat. Because they're rock, they're Rihanna, they're dance, or they're Broadway, or they have ruled out the majority of the choices.
Why?
Because they don't conform to this narrow musical palette choice of sad songs and dialogue explaining yourself. And let me repeat that. Okay, our activity is stuck in sad songs and bad voiceover. And the topic of that, this is right, your question, I really haven't digressed, because your question is about what happens next. And you, I want to talk about the more important step right before that step, which is, do you need voiceover? Or is voiceover some sort of gorgeous poetry that you found first that moves you? Is it a movie soundtrack that you can get the rights to and that you can use as dialogue? Okay. And so, I mean, this idea, I had a composer who wrote some of the soundtracks for Alliance in the late 80s and through the up until Adam and Eve, who actually went to WGI. He was so important to us. We flew him to Nationals so he could see some of the other groups that had original music, but all we were in world class. But he saw one group that had original music, and he was really upset. And he came to me and he said, my God, that sounded like they recorded it on a Casio in the bathroom. Okay. And the truth of the matter was, the group was really, really great, a world championship caliber. But when I dug in past a Casio, for dating myself, you know, a Casio is a little cheap plastic synthesizer, you know, right. And in the bathroom, meaning there's no environment that the music was produced in. It wasn't produced professionally, all of which is easy. But the problem is, now that music is so easy to produce and voiceover is so easy to record, it's being done just badly more often. People are reading stuff. They're having kids in the guard, okay, to do dialogue, thinking that the audience is going to connect, that they're, oh, those are kids in the guard that are doing the voiceover, when they have no training of audio training. People are popping their P's and slurring their S's. They don't read with any rhythm. And they think that the words are enough. And I'll talk about the irresponsible thing one more time. There's a unit, and it's not important who, it's important what, because I've seen this same show idea 10 times in the past 3 years, where the kids in the guard will introduce themselves and talk about the great experience of being in the color guard that they're in. And that the kids are starting to just, I saw it in the dance world, and I've even seen it in the baton world, this idea. I cringe through the entire thing because the voiceover is of low quality. It's recorded badly. The kids are just kids reading in childish, often shy ways. And the crowd is so disengaged. I've never seen it done well. Maybe it's out there and I just haven't seen it. But I'm here to tell you, I filmed 9 circuit championships, 8 circuit championships, and I sit through over 1,000 shows from 2011 alone. I have edited and watched over 1,000 drum and color guard performances. And I'm here to tell you, these I would discourage anyone from doing unprofessional voiceover work. Because even some of the world guards who find someone who reads well, I still cringe. And yeah, there's some names on my lips. But why? And here's another thing. If you're interested in bringing something new to the table, why on earth are you doing what everybody else is doing? Which is...
No, wait, that's what I wanted to ask you, Tony, because it seems to me that we're always looking for trying to be innovative, trying to take the activity in a new direction. And I'm wondering if we're not at a moment in time when actually being innovative and taking the direction, a new direction and doing something fresh is actually doing exactly what you're saying. In other words, let's not do the weepy ballad. Let's do a Rihanna tune and like make it amazing. Like that would be innovative, right?
Absolutely. And I think that one of the things that I was on the rehearsal floor as a performer, and there was a discussion between two greats of our activity, Tam Easterwood and Scott Chandler, were having an argument about something in the show at State Street Review. And and one of the things that Scott said was, right, but what is new about that? What are we bringing new to the table? And Scott has such an important influence on the activity. I remember being very profoundly struck at that moment. And those words have been in my DNA since that rehearsal. And Sal was, you know, Sal Salas was off to the side, letting his people do his thing, something else I learned from the greats, which is how to let the greats do their own thing. But this thing about bringing something new to the table, when Michael Shapiro, who is, of course, a phenomenal influence on the whole entire sport year round now, was in Alliance, it was something that also came up during a very important period, including Hotel California and Paradise by Dashboard Light. He was in the guard all the way since 87. He marched a long time during an important crucial period. This concept of what are you bringing new to the table? Well, you know what? If 300 color guards compete a year at WGI, everybody can't bring something completely new to the table all the time. We look to the world class to be able to do that. I really think that people are a little overly obsessed with bringing something new to the table. I hope that I don't sound like a hypocrite from the other things that I've said, because the thing you can bring new to the table is perhaps the environment, perhaps a piece of choreography, perhaps spinning with your feet, or in the case of I actually think I'm just going to be controversial. I'm just going to say it. I really think in terms of choreography, one of the only fresh approaches to writing as far as individual choreography has been Michael Shapiro. In the past 6 years or so or longer, he has a writing style that, and I'm going to say this, the judging community hammered me about in his early years. They said his writing is awkward. It appears too difficult, too clean for a line of people to do. And I have to admit, I had an important decision to make while Michael was still marching, where I actually almost got scared out of letting him do too much writing. And I took a deep breath. And I believed in him, and I believed in myself, and I believed in the concept of nurturing new talent. And I let him flourish. And yes, of course, he was destined to do his own thing and break away. Obviously, that's obvious now. But I literally was, the community was not supportive of what was his writing in an Alliance environment at the time. Okay, because like there's a saber in the mouth thing where Alliance. Through the sabers, they did a feature where the saber was in their mouth and then they threw it with their mouth and everything like that. That was all Michael. And then it became a vaulting point for more unusual. Obviously he knew it was a hit. So, but my point for you is you can be unique, to answer your question specifically. You can be unique through a piece of choreography. You can be unique through the way you use your body. You could be unique through color palette, perhaps. Or, you know, there's ways of being unique other than program concept all the time. Really.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I also think it's important for a lot of instructors have, you know, guards that are young, you know, and they're learning and they're not world-class groups. And so I think that it's also just giving – I'm just going to say this. Now, I feel controversial, but I'm going to say I think if you give your group the right concept and you write at the appropriate level and you give them good costumes and colors and flags – like, that is a huge gift and honestly might put you well ahead of a lot of people just because it's the right thing for your group.
Well, yeah, you made me realize in music, when you're a music teacher and you're programming for your band, you have the classics. And if you're a good music teacher, you will feel the responsibility of exposing your students to the classics. Yes, there are modern composers, and in the band world, you know, I was proud of the fact that there was a composer's name was Frank Tichelli. He was a contemporary band composer whose music was emotional and very, very contemporary. But you knew in the band world that you had better balance at a band evaluation or competition, that you had better, and I'm talking about concert band right now, that you had better balance someone like Frank Tichelli with a classic. And right. and that's what's missing, is that kind of awareness of programming. There are the classics. I do not believe that A-class, anyone who's going to compete in the A-class needs to consider classic approaches. And I certainly do not mean redoing Warhorse songs. Okay. Right. I remember a very important presentation that was virtually ignored by our activity. Michael Cesario spoke about programming in the Winter Guard activity many years ago, and he brought music with him, and he said he listed the same 10 Tired Warhorse tunes, Copeland at the time. There was a whole list of tunes that he listed that were being beaten to death. But what he did was he said, okay, if you like Copeland, then why don't you listen to his catalog, and why don't you find something else by Aaron Copeland? And that is the simplest thing that anyone can do. Find something. It's like how iTunes is. You know how iTunes says, if you like this, why don't you listen to this?
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And if it would just be what a young instructor or any instructor would do, if you like the Warhorse that you saw somebody do already, because I got to tell you, it's hard to get away from if something emotionally affected you. And you saw someone else do it, and then you're kind of trapped in recreating an emotional feeling. And I will tell you that I have some problems with some groups I have involvement with the fact that stylistically their instructors are so in love with some world guards and some imagery that affected them profoundly. They're trying to recreate the feeling and the imagery without let me tell you, not always without realizing it. They don't realize it. And I'm like, no. You picked that music because you loved when it was done before. And I'm okay with repeating music. I have repeated my own shows. I have done same soundtracks with cover versions. There's really a lot of ways. But we're still stuck in that step. But that step that we're talking about before putting the order of events in your show is where everything goes wrong. In my opinion, or many, many things go wrong.
Wait, which step?
The step about once you've programmed, and then you're deciding color and the way that the environment step. Now that I'm realizing it, I feel like I should write a book and that I should make one word like an anagram for these steps. Programming and then environment is the word we're kind of still talking about. Is what is the environment that the show is going to exist in?
Right.
And let me share with you one more thing because I'm struggling with it this month, which is the new trend to not pick the music first. It is to pick a concept and then to ask your designer or ask anyone to go on a hunting expedition to find music to fit a concept. I find that to be very troublesome because it is getting the cart before the horse, in my opinion. I mean, there are a million ways to skin a cat, and I've done concept shows as well, but they are really, really challenging and I think world-class mostly. And the idea of saying, I want to do a show about something abstract. I don't want to give a specific example but if it's an abstract concept and then you have to go on a music editing expedition to put it together, I don't know that's not the cart before the horse.
Well, and I think especially, as you said, especially for younger groups, like if you're a world-class group, maybe you can get away with that. But I think that, you know, Susie instructor who has, you know, a typical high school guard that's in novice A or whatever, like she needs to find, he or she, whoever they are, they need to find that music first. I agree with you. Don't you agree, Mary?
Oh, I have become inspired by music. And then the more you listen to it, you find things out about it. And then you know, you really can grow from that music as a young instructor. Absolutely. As an old one too, for a matter of fact.
Right. And I have to say that, so the majority of our activity, and I'd like to use the number 80%, and I think it's even 85%, but that's the A classes, A and below, national A, right, and below. Those shows, right, those show limits are around 5-minute soundtracks. And yes, some people go 5.5, and I try to dissuade them. And I will go on the record as saying, your soundtrack can be anywhere between 4 minutes and 5.5. Why? Unless you're very confident and you have a specific soundtrack that just screams that it cannot be edited. Okay, why do you go for 5.5 when that's 25% approximately longer and 25% more work and 25% more cleaning and choreography? When pick a song and then go with it. Why go into this elaborate construction process? Find a song you like and go. Grab the ball and run for the goal line. Start planning the show. Start teaching the kids. Go to, take a night of rehearsal and just write phrases first. Don't feel a need to set up on the starting line and pick the starting line first. Unless, again, it might be a concept staging approach, which I'm a firm believer in. Concept staging, gimmick staging, yes. Because now I find it fascinating to all these lines on everybody's floors, and now everybody's – I mean, let me just blow my own horn just for a second, okay? As Mary can back me up on this, okay? This thing with the lines on the floor right after Alliance, it's like Mary, okay? This thing with the black frames and the shapes and the doing drill on them, because then people started to put designs on their floor, and they were ignoring them. Or they use them on the starting line, and then the lines apparently disappear like yard lines.
Right.
Like yard lines. Just like, the yard lines are there for everyone to see, white against green, and yet, we have to really ignore them. So we train our audiences to stop looking at the grid. I mean, a football field is a jail. It looks like a jail. It's got white stripes. Okay.
Right.
All right. And yet everyone listening to this has been trained to stop looking at it. Again, the composer I mentioned earlier, his name was Rudy Sanchez, who wrote a number of our soundtracks. He went to WGI, and one of the first things he also said was, God, how do you stop looking at that circle, the basketball marks in the middle of the floor? I hadn't even thought about it. I had been so trained to stop looking at the basketball circle. And it was that remark from him, because we were not the first to have a tarp. The first people to cover the floor was Pride of Cincinnati under Ping Dawson, who covered the entire floor for an ending. But then the San Jose Raiders took the actual vinyl tarp and then covered the rectangle. Okay. So, but it was such a shock. It suddenly, okay, we really now, can take this to a new place. So we weren't the first, but we were very much right after San Jose. Our first tarp is Adam and Eve, which is right the year after that. And it has the Garden of Eden painted on it. And thanks to Scott King and Perpetual Motion, one of the great color guards from California, like I said, I consider myself someone who has been the puppet master of finding the greatest people I can possibly take credit for their work. I am the puppet master, and I don't mind admitting that I'm.
But Tony, sometimes the real genius isn't finding the right people, and then, like you've already said, letting them do their job.
I'd like to think so. Because I am very proud also of the collegial environment that Alliance created, because I don't have any proof of this, but I do know that we have created a disproportionately large number of people who were given creative authority within the Alliance of Miami. So they were able to get a taste for saying, I wrote that 8 counts or that trick is mine. Okay. I mean, in 1996, I was struggling for an ending and it was Black Magic Woman and we did not have an ending. And I had rewritten it every week and it eats up half a Sunday rehearsal to be able to do something like that. And on a dinner break with my headphones on, I'm getting distracted because there's this noise coming from the gym. Everyone's at dinner except one kid, and he is doing some carnival game with his flag, trying to throw his flag up in the air into the tube. And it reminded me of a carnival game that you would go to a carnival and try to win a teddy bear. And every time his flag actually would go in the hole, it would fall all the way down to the bottom of the tube, and it would make such a loud clunk of the tip hitting the ground that it sounded like a gunshot. And I thought to myself, God, Mark, would you stop doing that? And then all of a sudden, I saw him do it once, and I went, oh my God, that's it, that's it, that's it. And I run out in the hallway, and I start grabbing kids on their dinner break, and I'm like, okay, we're going to play a carnival game. And then we had auditions for who could get the flag in the hole. Okay, and so again, another great moment that a lot of people are aware of that I'm not really responsible for directly. I just saw brilliance in someone else. And who knew? I don't even think Mark's intention at the time. His name was Mark Lieberman. He was also responsible for the gypsy music that there's a show that I wanted to do gypsies for years, but didn't have any real viable music. And it kept struggling with authentic gypsy music that's not exactly appealing to the ear sometimes. And he had, exposure to some piece of music, and he saved our asses. And by the way, that music wasn't even picked until Thanksgiving.
Wow.
So, yeah, and mess.
But see, Tony, you created an environment to let all of that flourish. I think if I were you, that would be one of the things I would be most proud of, because, like you've already said, so much creativity flourished, and you created that environment. So I want to talk a little bit about Alliance of Miami, because, Mary, you wrote down in your notes for this podcast – the shocking things that came out of that guard. I mean, it was so innovative. It changed the activity. Mary, talk about
even the costuming, Tony, when you think about it. I mean, even Black Magic Woman or the Spider Show or something like that. I mean, even the costuming at that time was shocking, right?
Absolutely. And the main thing that was a positive and a negative at the same time was that I always tend to focus on the critics, as artists are always advised not to do, was the fact that the skin and the perceived nudity or the perceived overexposure of the skin, we were competing, showing more than 50 or 55% of the body at a time that people were still wearing their shakos and band uniforms.
Yes.
So, and what was interesting about those choices, and for Alliance, it really started... we were costumey from the beginning because that's the way I see the world. A lot of people probably don't know this, but I was in the theater, and I was involved. My high school band wasn't good at North Miami Beach High School. And so I ended up in the drama department because it fed a need that I had to perform and to be involved at a higher level. They competed at conference, at Thespian Conference. And so when the band I was in just really took a turn south, I was in chorus and I was in drama. And I had already been in a lot of plays in New York. I'm from New York City originally. I was in a community theater. My mother was in community theater. And so singing, all of that stuff was really who I was long before Color Guard. So to get to this issue of controversial choices, they weren't exactly on purpose all the time. They were just meant to enhance the music, and they were meant to enhance the show. And in the beginning, I was from State Street, and I was also from the East Coast. I marched in the North Star Drum and Bugle Corps. So I had Boston connections and I had Midwest connections. I was in the Cavaliers and the Madison Scouts, both of which were Color Guard trophy worthy Color Guards. While I was very lucky to be able to say I was in both the Cavaliers and the Madison Scouts in different seasons where they both won Best Color Guard. So, and Cavaliers were winning WGI. So I had these brilliant mentor experiences with the absolute greatest people in the sport. Very, very, very lucky. But I learned I got to take Sal Salas some credit here. Well, in 86, when Alliance was doing the Jungle Show, and we just happened to have a lot of boys. I wasn't exactly – the gimmick of this guy-girl thing, and this is going to be a bit of a shock, was just a piece of dialogue that Sal found that this disco song at the time where the woman's – Grace Jones, I don't remember who it was. She said, "Women beat their men." And the men beat on their drums. And that became 15 years of Alliance. I mean, really, how off am I here? Okay. That "women beat their men beat on their drums" thing. I'm getting goosebumps, a little emotional just telling you this story, because in a way, it's another secret I feel like I'm divulging that in some ways might be perceived as minimizing who Alliance was. I'm past that point of worrying about that. But Sal just said, okay, women beat their men, the men beat on their drums, and then the crowd went wild. The crowd went nuts, and I thought, okay, we're on to something here. Because when I was in State Street, the guy-girl thing, which later took a bigger role at State Street, but it wasn't the root of who the State Street Review was. That wasn't men and women. And to answer the controversy question, the whole idea of this split drum corps, split color guard, dividing the design of a team in half was definitely something that, because of being able to attract a lot of guys, started us down this road of having to be unique in design, having to be unique in costuming. I have a very strong objection to men, young men and boys wearing simulated girls costuming.
Thank you. Okay.
Amen.
It is irresponsible to me. Yes. It is so irresponsible. And I don't, and the saddest thing is, now as young men with their sexuality are getting more and more confident, I'm seeing more young men wearing the girl's costume and wearing fringe. And I mean, I'm not going to say all fringe is wrong. I worked for Algae, for crying out loud. Sequins and fringe were my life. And and in some ways, sequins and fringe will always be my life. But it's one of those things that there is, you can look at something. Okay. Our Supreme Court once went on the record as saying, you can't define obscenity, but I know it when I see it. And I think it's troubling to try to exactly define what's inappropriate costuming, but I know it when I see it. And Alliance was accused of inappropriate costuming. And I got to tell you, I went back and saw the Amazon show in a highlight reel of ours recently, and there were some close-ups. And I thought to myself, oh my God. Yeah, I don't think I would do that today, because the Amazon show in 1989 was one of the most skin exposed for the most kids. But still, there are different costumes in the group for different kids.
Right. But wait a minute, Tony. I want to go back to something you said earlier just to make this quick point. Those were not high school kids. These were adults doing that show.
Young adults, yes. There were very few high school kids in there. But you have to understand, WGI was still recovering is a strange word, but had just merged the high school, had just separated the high school and the independent right. classes. This is important history to know, is that the high schools were merged with the independents. So in the case of Holly High School and Marcus Whitman and Canandaigua, these very, very important high school programs were standard setters on their own. So the idea that being older didn't necessarily mean you were any better. And that's my roots in this sport, was older did not automatically equal more talented or better shows. So this idea that, oh, well, they're... Here's the thing to answer this question. I was once told during the Amazon year, or Adam and Eve, whichever in that period, was that, yes, you guys are adults, but 90% of the people that are sitting in the gym with you and being exposed to this are not, okay? And the parents of those 14 and 15-year-olds are seeing this. And then I got to give one of my most important influences a little bit of heads up here, which is Ralph Array. Ralph Array was pivotal in establishing this direction for costuming for the Alliance of Miami during this period.
Who was that? I'm sorry, who was that, Tony? I didn't hear the name.
Ralph Array.
Oh, Ralph Ray.
Yeah, Ray. And most people may recognize his last name because Coconut Creek Veray was named for him. Okay. And Veray of Coconut Creek. And he was a friend of mine, a very close friend. And we marched Madison together. He moved to South Florida. He, women beat their men, men beat on their drums. The imagery of that, all of this, a lot of the choices we made were his supporting me and saying, don't be afraid. Don't be afraid, because I did have a lot of hesitation on these decisions. But to answer your question about the appropriateness factor, let's talk about the Spider Show just for a second, because Mary Searcy Price, who is an important person to mention, she was in the Sky Riders. She was going into costume design. She was in Odyssey. I believe she had she was very close with Carlo. But she was someone who I met on tour and who was a very an influence for me, because she was wild and crazy and had out there ideas. And when she submitted a sketch to me for the Spider Show with boa feathers, and she offered to sew every costume individually. And she lived in Texas. I mean, we were going to have a costume designer in Texas that literally we weren't going to see a sample until I opened the box the week of premiere in January. And of course, every costume had to be customized and further fit and further done in person. But the whole concept of everyone wearing their own costume, which was, again, not our idea. That was an Erte Productions Quasar George Sangalli thing from just 2 years or 3 years earlier. We just took in a costumey further direction by giving it a theme. You know what I'm saying? The abstraction of everybody wearing something different. And so the Spider Show did not set out to be sexual. Let me make this point very, very clear. Maybe the Amazon show and further shows, Adam and Eve, took a more sensual turn. Okay. But there's just a piece of choreography in the Spider Show that almost got Alliance disqualified. So maybe this is a good point in the conversation to talk about Alliance being threatened at WGI of disqualification, and wow. Which was the Spider Show. And there was a situation in the middle of the show because it was about Black Widow spiders. And what was the life cycle of the Black Widow? Well, it was to mate and then to kill the male. It was just a basic function of the story. And so that show is known for the spider web. The giant, enormous, full gymnasium-covered spider web, which the members made. And it was held together with safety pins, okay? Because how are you going to sew something that's stretchy and that size? So and by the way, Rob Jett, who's currently a very important player with WGI, and Rancho Bernardo, it was a very key player during this period of Alliance. But anyway, the Spider Show was doing a mating ritual in the middle of the show. And it was just a piece of choreography. It was just, and it wasn't even, to this day, in my opinion, inappropriate, but it was a shock. It was a turning point in shock value for the Alliance of Miami and our sport. And a lot of people don't know that Lynn Lindstrom did pull me aside. She had a meeting, and she pulled me into headquarters, and she said, I'm going to tell you right now, that I might not be able to get you disqualified, but I will promise you, you will not be on the video. And
whoa.
And wow. And to say that to Tony Florio, in terms of knowing what Tony Florio has been involved with video, has been involved with video with WGI, has been in, now has a business of doing color guard and marching band video. The members knew that it was controversial, and we added to the controversy by designing a t-shirt that was designed by Mike Green, who's also a very, very involved instructor in our sport, who designed a silhouette of the shape, which looked sexual. But to this day, again, not inappropriate for high school kids to be exposed to in terms of choreography. It was just the girl laying backwards on the guy and making a modern dance shape. It was just a modern dance shape. And we came up with it in the dance studio. We had access to the University of Miami dance studio at the time, and we used to dance all the time, just dance and create dance pieces that were not the show. And that environment, that workshop environment, that's where a lot of these great ideas came from. I didn't have a girl lay on me and do that pose to this day. That was done by the members through creativity and through workshopping. I think it was Sherilyn Sweeney and Mike Green at the time who came up with that pose. And so the marketing of that show offended WGI because not only were they mad about it, we went to Oral Roberts University that year for the Tulsa Regional.
Oh, my gosh. No.
And yes, this is an important part of the story because we
– Oh, no.
Yes. This is very important because at the time, if you made the top three at any regional, you were automatically in the block for prelims, which greatly increased your chances of making finals, or that was the perception. So we went all the way out to Texas the year before to compete against Nouveau and Odyssey, and then we went again the year after, and I thought we were going to Texas. I think the regional hosted by Union was moved to Oral Roberts University. So we knew we were doing the show, but the problem for Alliance the Spider Show was in the middle of the year, our announcement, remember, there's no video really back then. There's no internet. There's no ability to know exactly what transpired in the gym. Okay, the phone calls from that regional were that Alliance has crossed every line imaginable and needs to be spoken to because it's too sexual, it's too overt. They made it sound like we were naked. Now, of course, we got more naked as the next 3 years happened, partially out of revenge, quite honestly, because I do – getting a chip on my shoulder has definitely been a part of what has motivated me. But we were absolutely threatened with disqualification, both before prelims, okay, threatened with disqualification, told to please take the mating out. I went back to the color guard. Again, these are kids, but I'm not that much older than them. I had just aged out. I'm within 4 years of most of them. And so we sat down, and I was scared. I didn't want them disqualified on my ego, not at all. And they pumped me up. Again, I'm getting goosebumps just telling you this. They're the ones who said, don't touch it. We do it. Okay. I'm going to say that again because of that sound. They said, you know, they really said, let's do it. Let's go for it. And then after prelims, when the threat got real, because they knew we couldn't get disqualified, I guess the TMP guys wouldn't go there on content. But then she threatened me with the video. And then when she said not on the video, I really, really, really was really going to change it. And we, you know what we did? We said we were going to change it, and then we actually changed something so minor so that it wouldn't – I could say we changed it, but it didn't look different to the viewer. We just changed a very, very minor thing. It put me on the wrong side of politics with the WGI community. So from our second year in world-class finals, I'm on the defensive with the Elder Statesmen, and I'm definitely on the wrong side of WGI because I made that decision to buck advice. And then the next year is the Amazon, you know, thing, which is high camp. We haven't used the word camp. I mean, I find it very interesting that a lot of people like to recall Alliance of Miami a cartoon. And what's really funny about that is I've always said, well, what's wrong with a cartoon? What's wrong with a good cartoon if that's your intention? Mm-hmm. And there's a whole show that Alliance does that's deliberately a cartoon. Because A Paradise by the Dashboard Light is like three colors. It's black, red, and yellow. And it is designed to be a 50s cartoon. And that was in response. I used to always respond to criticism because it hurt. But I wanted to address it and to fight it and to resist it. And the Spider Show has a very weak rifle line, a very, very bad rifle. The year before, we have a very weak rifle line. So the Spider Show, the first thing we do is just give rifle right to you. I tell young people now, and this is good advice, whatever the criticism of your group is from the year before, address it in the first 30 seconds. Address whatever was considered to be most not correct about your group the year before in the first 30 seconds.
Wow.
Okay, and it's a secret. I'm giving it away. And let me tell you something. If you think the judges don't sit down and say, I don't remember much about this guard from last year, but I do remember, ooh, saber was not a good thing for them. Well, you know what? Open up with the best saber you could possibly manage and put the critics to bed right off the line.
Wow.
That's powerful stuff. Mm-hmm. So Tony, have you been controversial this whole time, or did you like our listeners are wanting to know how this is all played out. Like, are you still the bad boy of WGI, or did you come around somehow?
No, I think that as we age, we become naturally more conservative, but through personal issues and things like that, I've been kind of forced back into a bad boy corner again for a whole host of different reasons. And I have to kind of admit, I've been kind of written off right around 2004, 5, 6, that it was harder. I didn't get as much work. The couple groups I worked with, Greater Johnstown from New York, they really stuck by me through a period where I really wasn't teaching that much. Or having, a lot of what was perceived to be great success. I had teaching success because I was working and getting paid to do it, and also had writing some great shows. And it was during that period that I took great pleasure in watching judges who absolutely do not like the way Tony Florio designs a show. And it's not personal. Let me be clear about this. These are people who maybe they don't like me personally, but they just don't like the philosophy of the way I create shows in general. But watching them credit a show and fall in love with it when they don't know I have anything to do with it has been some of the sweetest revenge.
That's so great. Well, Tony, I do want to say that I do think that, I mean, I've had a very similar journey, and I do think that at a certain point, it's the creating the art that becomes important and not it being you. And I do think that that's shows great growth. And I do think that that's really neat that you're sharing that, because I think that's true. I think at some point, it's the work that becomes more important than you necessarily being credited or everybody knowing. Like, I think that's really cool. And I think that, my experience has been, like, years later, I find out that, oh, yeah, that show that I loved was a Tony Florio show. Like, that's happened a lot. I mean, you have created so many shows that I love.
Thank you.
And I wanted to mention that Amazon show is on my top five all time. Like, I just – that I was there in WGI that year. That rocked my world to this day. It makes my toes curl. I love that.
Thank you. I hear that a lot. I used to get phone calls from strangers about how can I get a copy of that, or how that was the show that, even more than the Spider show, which I think was probably artistically a little stronger, but the Amazon show sent the arena into such a national frenzy that, yes. And again, I was lucky. What were my resources? Well, I had the 6'2" captain of Tate Chaparral. Okay. And I had, most people don't know this, but the top three medalists, Scholastic World Guards from the year before, were Tate High School, Choctahatchee High School, and Union High School. And I had one girl from each one of those color guards in
wow.
that show. Okay. And that created a dynamic within the females that is a contributing factor into how competitive the women are in that group and how strong they are. And the fact that there are two other innovative controversial issues that occur in 89 and 90. In 89, the Amazon show, the girls do the entire first minute and a half without any boys, and the boys are outside of the arena. Okay.
Right.
And that then became, I can't tell you the list of how many things Alliance did that they made rules against the year after. Okay. So that was the first one that we broke. And then the next year we reversed it for Adam and Eve, because obviously the way the Bible seems to work, the boys come first. So the next year the guys do the first minute and a half and there are no girls. And because the rule was rewritten in between, we had to find a way to hide the girls without having them be visible, and they were behind the curtains in Buffalo. And again, the powers that be at WGI were so angry that we had manipulated the system, because they were on the floor. They weren't in the tunnel. So we technically got around the rule. But to screw us up, this is true, they, between prelims and finals, they went and pinned all the spaces between the curtains.
Oh my God.
Okay, so on the video, and there is proof of this, okay, on the video, the girls don't know that the curtains are sewn shut for finals, and they go behind them entering from a different entrance, and they go to come out where the music says they're supposed to come out, and they're trapped. Okay. So in the moment, God bless my kids, you know, in the moment they pick up the curtain and they come out from underneath and they pull it. In one case, a girl tears the curtain apart to get out it, and then they have a wonderful performance nonetheless. And I think that that's an important thing to make. The members of Alliance were responsible for these decisions. The members of Alliance drove the creative ship. I just had an incredible collegial atmosphere where I was the youngest instructor at the time, to the best of my knowledge to this day, other than Brian McCormick from the Royal Guardsmen before me. I was the youngest world-class finalist director. Carlo was in this grouping also, but he was a couple years older than me, just not, you know, not by a lot. But so this collegial atmosphere led to all of these decisions. And yes, this also further compounded my reputation with WGI
But Tony, what's interesting to me is that, I mean, I don't know you, and I don't want to offend you by saying this, but like, you were a guy with a lot going on and a lot of ego and a lot of, you know, like, I'm in charge. I am being creative. I'm like, you know, like, your creativity was flowing out of you in a way that was pretty intense. And what's fascinating to me is that you also at the same time created this atmosphere where everybody else was allowed to flourish. And that's unique to me, because a lot of times if someone's really powerful and creative, they are holding on so tight to every bit of control. And what worked for you, what your genius here seems to be, that you had that going on, and yet you allowed everyone else around you to be creative and flourish and grow too. Like, that's exceptional to me.
Right. And I'm a little emotional now. But having to send the children out of the nest, such as Ralph Foray and Michael Shapiro and the others who left the creative team because they needed to go out on their own and do their own thing, Tim Lee, it was painful. It was like losing a child off to college, or losing, because I always thought the team I had in place at whatever year, I've mostly always felt they are fabulous. Javier Sosa, you know, Tim Wilcox, all these people. And so losing them, I always panicked that I don't have the next person in place. What am I going to do at the next juncture? And then what was I always forced to do? I had to look at what was in front of me and take it from there. And that naturally, organically, and I got to say that word again, organically, the next cream of the crop would kind of present itself. Billy Pacifico is a case in point where he was inordinately young, and there were superstars older than him in the Alliance at Miami Gypsy Show. There were absolutely some real stars. Eric Bacon. Oh my goodness, let me not get through this without mentioning Eric Bacon, the yellow man from Hotel California, who was a great performance influence and went on to teach Shaktai and Paradigm and to be, you know, an influence. He was perhaps maybe the single most famous performer who had ever marched in Alliance, other than maybe Marcos Martinez, who is also still
involved in activity.
And Daniel Helton, absolutely. Absolutely. And the controversy even that year, I do want to tell this interesting story because it speaks to the whole issue of Alliance and Tony Florio and our inordinate conflict with the philosophy of WGI. In 1994, obviously Hotel California, there were four members who never left the quadrant of the floor that they were in for the entire duration of the design. And it was considered nowadays, I mean, people reflect on that as a very, very innovative project. At the time, most people don't know, my high school color guard did that show with a similar stage setup 2 years before that. So there's girls in Hotel California who did that show twice in their marching careers. But the real issue I want to bring out here is on a week season, years later, Stairway to Heaven, I had perhaps one of the single longest WGI judges, very influential, a person who I considered a mentor, pull me aside at the Tampa Regional and pull me aside critiquing Stairway to Heaven and say to me, Tony, what happened? Your approach with Hotel California, you've kind of lost your way. And she was trying to encourage me. Her point, her reason for pulling me aside was meant to be encouraging, but she had completely forgotten that she was the person who gave Hotel California the least amount of credit in ensemble. Mm. She had us 10th place that year, okay, and was partially the reason we didn't place higher. So the idea that WGI has a short attention span and a short memory still happens to this day. Yes, I know, artists don't get credit. Yeah, I guess the sign of a true artist in all genres is you frequently don't get credit while it's happening.
Absolutely. In fact, we talk about that all the time about band, like drum corps shows and band shows. Like often the shows we're talking about and that people will say that their favorite shows, whatever, are not shows that won or not even shows that did well. But the point is what was created last. And yeah, a lot of times it's not right then that you get that credit.
Tony, go ahead.
No, I just wanted to mention Carolina Crown because I'm still on a high from this past couple days and this, the couple bit of exposure I had to their color guard. And I almost put a Facebook posting. I'm so profoundly affected and renewed vigor and renewed attitude about teaching from the Carolina Crown Color Guard this summer, from what their priorities are, what their philosophy is, their choreography, everything about them. And yes, on the surface, yeah, it's kind of a rock and roll imagery thing. Of course, Tony Florio would like it, but it goes far beyond that to me. They profoundly impacted me. And it's because of, but did they get credit? No. Not even close. They weren't even in the top three, I think, in Color Guard. And yet,
seriously? Goodness gracious, are you serious?
I think they were fourth in core and as well as Color Guard. And I think in one of the three shows this week, they were fifth or sixth.
They were sixth.
In one of the shows.
Yeah. I looked at the recap specifically to find that out.
Yeah, that's Thursday. And that's the night that I saw in the movie theater. And I was really upset by that. I really was profoundly upset by that and discouraged. As much as watching them encourages me, I was very disheartened, is maybe the better word, to realize that something that I think I can separate my emotions and my personal priorities and taste enough to just talk about them in terms of the way the sheets are written and what value they bring and the fact that it just it's just kind of ignored. So I stopped myself from posting to Facebook. I wrote something very positive about them and I just let it go because Facebook is really a public sandbox. And
yeah, but Tony, after everything you've been saying about your career with Alliance, like if anybody knows that you're not necessarily going to get credit from a judge and that really doesn't matter, it seems like it should be you.
You would think, but. you would think, but it's just one of those things that you just always hope for for the glimmer, and listen, there are some, I hate to talk about something that's negative, but it is true and it is career shaping. So I do want to mention in terms of Alliance that it's more than three times there were people who went through the WGI Academy who were chastised in their trial judging at Nationals for overreacting to the Alliance of Miami. And in some cases, they chose not to go forward. In some cases, they were kept from becoming a WGI judge specifically for overreacting to the Alliance of Miami and for not accepting that this is not what you're overreacting to what you perceive GE to be. And, sometimes it took a few years for the person in that situation to tell me because they didn't want to crush me. And they knew that hearing that's the highest level of real lack of support and a lack of encouragement from the national community was these actual people who went through 2 or 3 years of training and then who were kind of hammered about, no, Alliance is not worth that many points. They're just not. And here's why. And then the justifications as to the specifics as to why a lot of what Alliance was doing did not have point value, it gets even more hurtful. And then I got to be honest, Alliance became a textbook example of when, I don't know, you guys know subcaption integrity, that every judging sheet has the top, has the what and the how. And in GE, there's repertoire and there's performance. And when the judging community went through a period of trying to talk about when you should reward performance over repertoire, which wasn't common, they were trying to educationally get judges to be able to be comfortable having the bottom box at the time number be higher than the top box. And in Drum Corps, the first victim of that was the Madison Scouts. And what that meant was, and let me be clear, was that your kids and your performers are exceeding, and in some cases far exceeding, what they're given. And anyone who writes or creates who doesn't take deep umbrage with the idea that that's quite a call to make for a judge to be really, really, how do you really know when the performers are far exceeding or exceeding what they're given? I would think that'd be more common in A class than it is in world class, ironically. And in the case of WGI, again, whether you get into using this or not, I feel that it's an unfortunate, very, very sad state when Alliance in Miami was specifically used as an example of how often the performers far exceed what they're given. And not just one year. We're talking over and over. And after that lecture was given to the WGI judges for the next 3 years, it happened over and over and over again, further hammering us down into the WGI rankings.
Well, Tony, we need to start wrapping this up, but I do want you to know that, you know, history and time does end up vindicating a lot of things. And I really think that the community looks back at those shows and sees them for what they were and appreciates them probably in a way that maybe they weren't by everyone at the time. You know, and I mean, I'm sitting here and I'm telling you that Amazon show is like, that was one of those moments in my life, you know, so don't. You know, I understand completely what you're saying, but I also want you to know that, you know, we appreciate what you did and the role you played in pushing boundaries and taking the activity. Right, Mary?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I've worked with you, Tony, personally. Of course, you know, I've been on staff at Lake Mary for a long time and Alliance a long time. So I know where all this comes from. And it's always that place that you want people to feel successful. It's always about that place, even though it may not be successful in the end or on a judge's sheets.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. Oh,
but there's lots of measures of success.
Lots of measures of success. And the latest turn is I wrote this somewhere and I said, I never imagined I'd put a WGI DVD again in on the same career and have three finalists on one DVD, and really it was just 1/10 from being four. And that the idea, when I say I have, they're not, none of them are my groups, but they're all in different ways projects I have a important role in. And I almost would like for the, because I don't think the person who might be listening to this might even draw these comparisons, say, in Independent Open between Gainesville Independent and Orlando Visual, and to see that these two things couldn't be more diverse, yet both very successful. And that in this Scholastic Open class, Collins Hill and Lyman High School, who are, you know, yes, one may reek of my influence, but the other, not at all. And yet they, again, both very successful. Very successful.
But, you know, Tony, that speaks to your talent and to your great experience. And, you know, I think it's wonderful that you are still out there creating these shows, sharing your artistic genius with all these groups, and all of this stuff that we've been discussing that you've been through have taken you to this moment in time where you're capable of creating this kind of diversity and knowing what's right for each group. And I think that everybody that's been listening to this conversation will have a lot of things they can take away from it. So when they sit down right now and they're starting to put their show together and they're making decisions, like all of this information you share with us today, I think will be really, really helpful to them as they're going through that process. You agree, Mary?
Yes. And just not only your process, but your process is very similar to what everybody should go through. Taking your process, the vertical, the horizontal, designing costume, designing flag, thinking about show choice. You know, show choice and show costuming is so important, especially, for all groups, all ages. I'll just say that.
And I'm glad that it's a good point to wrap up and say, we didn't talk about how to stage or write a phrase really at all, because the real deal happens long before you're in the gym. doing that.
And, you know, maybe we'll hit you up for another conversation about those very topics. But I think that what we have talked about, which is this conceptual stuff early on, is so important. And it's what everybody needs to be dealing with right now. So I really appreciate you taking time to talk with us today, Tony.
Sure. It was very enjoyable.
You have any final words you want to say?
Environment and get no ballads. I don't want to word anything in the negative, but musical variety and think of your environment, and then things inside of it will all of a sudden look better.
Wonderful. So thank you so much, Tony. We really appreciate it.
I appreciate it too. Thank you so much.